love espresso, drip coffee, and cold brew? With the Ninja Luxe Cafe, if you can crave it, you can brew it. Espresso? Balanced. Drip coffee? Rich. Cold brew? In a flash. With Barista Assist technology, you brew with no stress and no guesswork. And make perfect silky microfoam hands-free from dairy or plant-based milks. Bring the coffee house home and unlock your favorites with the Ninja Luxe Cafe.
The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to full. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. We are back with another episode of Clown Takes. 2 weeks into the season, just 20 games, and there's still plenty of clowning to take place on Twitter, and we are here to dissect all of it. I'm your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to clown at me on Twitter, you can find me there at Color of the Iris. Joining me on the show from Boca Raton, Florida, by way of Centerville, Massachusetts, is Jeremy Schilling. Jeremy, how's it going?
Until the Red Sox start winning some games, not any better than our previous recordings.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair. And where can people find you on Twitter?
JShill20, at JShill20.
Nice. Also with us on the show from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you?
I'm going to start this show with an epic idea. And by epic, I mean terrible. I think, you know, in the spirit of Clown Takes and in the spirit of this era of Red Sox baseball, they should have Clown Night once a year. And the hilarious thing about it is not everybody's going to get the memo, and clown phobia is a thing. You know, they show up and everybody's dressed like clowns. Why not at this point? So,
I think the better idea, you know how they do like down here in South Florida, the Panthers, I go to the hockey games and they'll do like whiteout night, or the Heat will have whiteout night. And like literally everyone wears white. I don't know how they spread the message. I would love for the fan base to just not show up, like no one, for one game. And really send a message. That's what I think is even better. Screw you, management.
Over the winter, I had a tweet saying, make John Henry bring back cardboard fans and have that be the right. Thing. That's what
you could pay to have your face be one of the cardboards in the Green Monster.
Exactly.
Yeah, that'd be perfect. Paper bag night, you know? Yeah.
Paper bags will be out in September, Jason. I don't doubt that for a second, the way this thing's going.
That's the frustrating thing about this fan base is, number one, it is a tourist spot, so you're just going to get those people. And I just don't think this fan base is tough enough off of social media to do some type of a demonstration. You know, if everybody wears black shirts, if everybody wears white shirts, I think a great thing would be to do is to bring your lawn chair and sit around the park and give your money to the restaurants, get your beer from them.
I like. Eric, yeah. I can get behind that.
The fans can all mingle. It would, at least for one night, it would be something historic.
The fan base can do it because they've done it before. Dave Portnoy, after Tom Brady got suspended, spent I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of dollars in printed t-shirts, bathing suits, and towels of Roger Goodell in a clown face. And, you know, Portnoy's not a huge baseball fan. I know he's a Boston fan. So, but if it gets bad enough, somebody like that has the cash to throw around to do a campaign like that with John Henry as, you know, caricature and a clown, I think that would be great. I mean, we're coming up with some really good ideas here, Terry, but that's another option. You get some rich guy or girl out there that wants to make a point, make those clown t-shirts of that cheap prick John Henry.
I might be mistaken. I feel like Barstool did come out with a John Henry clown nose shirt. I forget what season. It wasn't exactly the same time as when they did the Goodell ones, but I want to say they did, and they just didn't sell. And maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's because it was Carrabba's trying to push them. And you
know, you got to get enough people angry, right? And no one was more angry than, you know, the greatest football player of all time being suspended. So the circumstances were a little bit different, but I like my idea still, and I'd wear it. Can I read you guys a tweet I just found?
Go for it.
Go for it. Okay.
Steve Peralt. Salary this season, Joe Kelly, $8 million. Okay. Entire Red Sox lineup from today, $7.9 million.
Wow. That's a hell of a tweet. Yeah.
Wow. That's embarrassing. That is utterly embarrassing. You're the Boston Red Sox, and you can't field a major league lineup. Anyways, just thought I'd add, that's not my clown take. I have a different clown take.
That's a hell of a nugget.
It is. Yeah, no, they truly put out the cheapest and one of the worst lineups we've ever seen. So, and you know what? They lost. They deserve it. So that's what you get. But as you said, Jeremy, you've got a clown take to kind of lead us off, so I won't stop you. Go for it. What do you got for us?
Thanks, Jason. So I'm going to read it. I don't have the exact question, but he was asked whether he was going to avoid the DL. And the quote is, quote, "I don't know yet, but the thing that I know is, like, I don't want to go back too soon. I'm going to take my time to be ready." Devers never struck me as the type of player to put himself above the needs of the team. He's been here long enough where this would have reared its head by now. And for him to take that step, I personally think is a message to ownership more than it is anything about his character as a professional athlete, because I do think Raffy, as he showed this week by making himself immediately available to DH, he asked in the previous series to go back a day early from the shoulder, and management said no, held him back, hurts his knee, still plays, tweaks it again, and now he's taking this position. There's a deeper message here, guys. You know, if this player who has no inclination to put himself above the team is obviously all of a sudden doing that, it's a message. It's a message that he's pissed. That he's pissed the way they've started. He's pissed the way they're playing. I think he's probably pissed that they can't support the starting pitching staff. And any other number of different things. That was a really surprising comment to hear from that particular player, a guy who really doesn't even like to talk to the media. I think I watched an interview last week where he actually used an interpreter. So there's a certain level of discomfort there, maybe. But for him to come out and say that, very clearly, unambiguously saying, "I'm not going to come back unless I'm healthy because this team stinks," it speaks volumes. And, you know, I'm not going to go into an ownership thing because I could bash ownership every single recording we do. But for our highest profile player, the only player on our roster that you'll see on a national like ad or getting any publicity nationally, it speaks volumes.
Terry, what do you think?
You know, you can really read into that comment from Devers a lot of different ways. And the way this has played out the last 48 hours has been pretty bizarre, because he comes out of a game seemingly out of nowhere immediately. I think even O'Brien might have mentioned it before the game was over that they were planning on getting imaging done the next day. And so it was this really just the sense of doom kind of came over me. I'm like, man, he must have really done something to it. If, you know, and then the post game interview, really weird. Devers, he looked very depressed. He was short in all of his answers, and he's in the lineup the next day. He's in the lineup as DH. So it's like, who saw that coming? And
by the way, that's a him decision, right? That's not a like Cora saying you got to play a game in April. Like, Devers went into the manager's office and said, guess what? I'm playing. I mean, that's a significant part of the story.
Well, the one comment from Cora before the start yesterday where Devers DH'd was they asked Cora what had gone down, and Cora said, well, he just got scared. So, you know, I mean, I guess you can have a precautionary MRI, you know.
So then he asked out of the game? I mean, that's the way they interpret that, right?
I'm not sure, but
makes it even more bizarre.
So he's in the game yesterday, and then he didn't have a very good game, by the way. He was 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts, pretty close to a golden sombrero there. And then today he's kind of, you know, casting doubt on his short-term availability, but they haven't put him on the injured list. So it's like, what's really going on here? And maybe Jeremy could be onto something. Like, Kenley's upset every day, having hissy fits, and it's just not a fun environment here. And guys can check out, especially, I mean, this is a continuation of September. Nothing's different. The team is one collective major malfunction, and I don't know what to make of it.
Bringing Kenley into it's interesting because he's been, he didn't come in prepared to play the season. He's not in shape. He's not pitching right away in spring training. Like, you saw the writing on the wall. He was coming. He was making statements. I followed him when he pitched the Dodgers, but, like, not every day. I wasn't, like, listening to clubhouse clippings. So I don't know if he's been kind of a problem before or not. I know that I saw it coming when this year started. Devers is just out of the blue. Literally 3 days ago, he asked into the lineup, and now he's doing the exact opposite of that. I think this series is it. There's some deep rooted things going on in the clubhouse, and maybe this is a power play. Hey guys, you got me for 10 years and $330 million. Unlike Jensen, I'm not going anywhere. So you want to keep me happy. You want me to put myself and my body ahead of, put the team ahead of my body. Things need to change, and they need to change now, you know? And by the way, I don't know it's the right message, but he's right. Why not protect? He's making $30 million a year, guys. Why wouldn't he want to stay healthy and give himself a chance to produce, earn marketing dollars? You know, I don't know how old he's going to be at the end of the contract. So, but maybe part of his thing is maybe I want one more contract at the end of this thing, you know, and I'm going to go out and put my body on the line for a 10-10 team that just hit 176 against the goddamn Guardians.
Yeah. It's
there's something there.
It's dysfunctional right now in that clubhouse. It's absolutely dysfunctional. You've got Kenley Jansen, who is checked out and doesn't want to be here and isn't putting in the work to make himself available. He's, you know, short up out of shape, just kind of doesn't care. You've got the manager who we all know has one foot out the door. We all know Cora's gone at the end of this year. He knows it and we know it. And whether he wants to, you know, go to a bigger market or whether he wants more of a, you know, GM front office role somewhere because he didn't get it here, I don't know. But the manager has one foot out the door and the players know that too. So if, like, it's hard for a guy like Rafael Devers where, you know, he signed this big contract, so he's locked in. What are the Red Sox going to do? Trade him? Like, they can't. I mean, and even if they could, he'd probably go, fine, trade me. I'll probably end up in a better situation than here. Trade me to somewhere, you know, where maybe I have a chance to win with an ownership group that actually gives a damn and puts talent around me. So he's sitting there going, look, I've already signed the big deal. Like, I don't have to go out there and put my health on the line for an ownership group that doesn't care, a GM who didn't do his job, and a manager who is already looking for his next job after this. So it's just really, really dysfunctional. And then on top of that, you just got like other little things like the Netflix cameras all over the place. you know, his team is losing, they're blowing games late, and they got to go back into that dugout, and there's Netflix cameras right in their face. I mean, that's completely dysfunctional. So I look at a guy like Rafi Devers, and I think he so badly wants to take that leadership role because he knows it has to be him. He signed the big deal. He's the superstar player. He's one of the more, you know, long tenured players there now. So he wants it, but he's looking around going, they're not giving us talent. They're not spending money. And the manager is going to be gone. The manager is already planning his next moves. So what the hell am I supposed to do? And now he comes up with this knee injury, and he probably, you know, the fan base wants him to play, and everyone's saying, well, if you're not going to go on the IL, then you should be in the lineup. And he's sitting there going, no, I'm not going to go out there and tear my knee apart when, you know, for a team that doesn't care this year, for a team that's not going anywhere. So it's just a really, really overall just dysfunctional situation. And it's amazing that it only took 20 games for it to get this dysfunctional to a point where it's just like every loss feels like three losses. And every win feels like you barely scrape by. It's just, it's not a good feeling right now. The feeling around the team is just, it's very doomsday for a team that's 10-10. I mean, I know they're in last place. They're in a tough division, but they're at 500. I mean, look at what the White Sox are going through. Look at the Astros, who are under 500. And they were, you know, they're expected to be, you know, right back in the World Series this year. So the Red Sox don't have it that bad. They've had some bad luck early on with injuries, you know, in spring training, losing Giolito, and then recently losing Tyler O'Neill, and, you know, Devers has this knee thing, but like, they're not completely out of it, but yet it feels like they are, and they are starting to sort of exude that. They're starting to go out there and saying like, oof, it's just, it's not feeling good. So for Devers, like I was surprised by his comments too, but I also kind of get it. Because he's just in a really bad situation, and I think his hands are tied. He wants to play, but he's also not going to put his career on the line just, you know, for a team that's kind of going sideways and is eventually going to start going downhill.
It just blows me away that he just did it. He just put himself back in the lineup. Same injury. You know, like, what changed in 2 days? The series, something's going on, man. Something's going on. We'll find out. Netflix is rolling. We're going to find out. But something happened. You know, tempers are maybe flaring behind the scenes. Cora is always very good about keeping things in-house. So for him to put himself in twice, shoulder coming back from the shoulder, coming back from the knee, and then take this position, it's just – we don't know why, but something's happened, and either Devers legitimately is scared about his knee all of a sudden and it's gotten worse, or he's sending a message and he's pissed, which I think, by the way, is the far more likely scenario.
I agree. Yeah, absolutely. And to piggyback off of your clown take, because it very much has to do with Rafael Devers and his knee injury, I'm going to introduce my submission for the week. And this one comes from Ed Hand, who many of you probably know. A lot of you probably follow him on Twitter. Pretty prominent Red Sox Twitter personality. And on April 17th, so this was this past Tuesday, right, during the Guardian season or series, excuse me. And this was after Devers left the game with a knee injury. And he tweeted out, if Devers' knee injury is significant, I'm ready to see Breslow trade all the one-year guys and officially call this a development season. Just losing Story was already pushing it. Losing Rafi would be a death blow. So I saw this and I did like a triple take because Ed Hand, I followed him for a while. He's generally like Mr. Positivity. Like, you know, he's one of those, everything is awesome. Like, you know, if the Red Sox get swept, it's like, well, don't worry, you know, season's not over. He was one of the guys that last year when I was, you know, screaming from the mountaintops for Tristan Casas to be sent down because he struggled in the first half, he was one of the guys on Twitter saying, it's still early. Why is everyone panicking? It's still early. Give him time. It's still early. Well, now I'm going to turn around on him. Ed, it's still early. It's mid-April. They're 10-10. But if Devers has to go on the IL, the season's over. So that's it. Just Devers goes down, that's it. We give up. Everybody go home. Like, and so he said he wants to see Breslow trade all the one-year guys. So Kenley Jansen, which I don't think any of us would lament at this point, but Jansen would be traded. Chris Martin would be traded. Tyler O'Neill, the most exciting player or one of the most exciting players on your team this year, would be traded, as well as a bunch of other guys. So that's just it. You lose Raffy and you got to blow it up and just, that's it. Let's all go home. Season's over and just call up all the young kids and let's just, instead of watching the big league team, let's watch the Worcester Red Sox all year. How is that any way to be a fan? That sounds horrible to me. Like just, oh, that's it. No, not going to have a baseball season. Oh, well, I'll just watch the Portland Sea Dogs all summer. Like, I'm not doing that. No, it's still early. And look, you guys know me. Like, if the Red Sox are playing this way in mid to late June, then I would see that and go, yeah, no, he might have a point. It might be time to blow it up, right? Because I've called for that in years past. If you're going to be in last place and you're not going anywhere, blow it up at the deadline. Sell and get the guys that you need. It's one of the biggest reasons why I was so happy Chaim Bloom got fired, because he didn't have the guts to do that at the deadline when the team sucked. He didn't blow it up enough. So at that point, I'll have that conversation. I'm not having that conversation in mid-April. That's absurd. Now, look, this Red Sox team and the roster is deeply flawed. I agree. They've got a lot of issues. And if you do lose Rafael Devers, yeah, that's going to be tough to overcome. It's not impossible. Teams lose superstar players all the time. They don't just punt on the season. And it's like, I think what really set me off about it is that, like, there are guys like him in this fan base that they care more about the promise of the future than they do the actual major league team on a day-to-day basis. Like, guys like him would rather watch the Worcester Red Sox just, you know, every day than watch the big league team, because they're so obsessed with Mayer and Anthony and Teal and all these guys and, you know, the promise of, well, just wait till 2025, just wait till 2026 when all these guys are up and, you know, then we're going to contend. No, you can still contend this year. Now, it's on ownership and front office to actually do it, to make some moves and to, you know, engineer it in a way that if you do lose a player, they go out and make a move to make up for it and you can still compete, which I think we can all agree we don't have a lot of faith in them to do that. But it's not like you don't have anything on this team. Your starting rotation has been off to a great start. And that's without Nick Pivetta, who is one of your more reliable starters, and he's on the IL right now. Your offense has been sputtering, but there's still time for them to turn it around. Tristan Casas is still playing really well. Tyler O'Neill will be healthy at some point and will be back in your lineup. Hopefully, guys like Yoshida can, you know, get his bat turned around. Jaron Duran has been off to a phenomenal start. He's like one of the most exciting players in baseball to watch. But if Devers goes down, it's just, oh, well, just turn it into a development season and just don't, you know, just punt. I mean, so at that point, fine. You know what? Terry, if Raffy has to go on the IL, let's not do shows next week. Let's, you know, just cancel the podcast. Let's all just go home. Let's all go home. Find a Netflix show. Find a Hulu show to watch all summer. Don't watch the Red Sox, because if Raffy goes down, that's it. Season's over, according to guys like him. It's just, I hate that mentality. In April, it's still too early. They will be fine. If Raffy has to go on the IL, they can figure something out and they can still compete. So it just takes like that where it's like, oh, I, you know, punt on the season because I'd rather watch, you know, Kyle Teal for the rest of the summer. It just like, that's, how is that any way to be a fan? I don't get it. Like it's, I don't understand that mentality. So that just set me off the other day. Cause I'm like, it's April and you're ready to punt on the season because you're so obsessed with the prospects and the young kids that you don't give a damn about the major league team. It's just, that's boring to me. So that was it. That was my submission.
You want me to go, Jeremy, or do you want to go? You're on mute. That's a Charlie move, by the way.
I told myself I wouldn't do that. So a couple things. One, you're one game, even today after losing 3-4 to the Guardians, you're one game out of the wild card. The current playoff format really keeps teams around longer. It's one of the reasons why I think they changed the trade deadline. So Yeah, I mean, you're in the hunt. You have great starting pitching. If you start hitting a little bit, I don't think you're going to all of a sudden find yourself at the end of May in first place in the AL East. But if you're in it and you can make it interesting and get people to the ballpark and have interest in your product, it doesn't make any sense. The other thing that doesn't make any sense is we're already seeing a possible rushed prospect in Rafaela. So what do you want to do? You want to kill the growth of the farm system by bringing all those guys up and having them be premature and then get smoked in the AL East and all have 190 averages and set them back while simultaneously beginning the clock on their free agency window? It's not a logical take. So, like, I'm not emotional about it, but it's just not logical, and that's where I have my problem. So, you know, even after – that take was before the series or during the series. The series didn't go well. I mean, obviously, if it wasn't for Hauk, we'd probably get swept because we only scored 2 runs in that game. But they're playing hard. You know, they're in the games, except for the one they lost 6-0 on Monday. You know, they had leads. It just doesn't make any – it's just not logical, and that's where I have my issue. I have no emotion behind it. I do think if you're 10 games out of the wild card at any point, even early, you would maybe consider it, you know, especially if a team goes down with an injury and you have a player that can fill that contender's roster and you can kind of sell at a high point. You know, that starts to make sense. But right now, the pitching's been too good, you know, and if it continues that way, you're going to be in a lot of games. So I agree that this is a clown take 100%. And there's some of those guys that I'd want to re-sign. Like if you are going to commit to 2025 and Martin has rebounded nicely, like as an example, and I know he's getting old, but 1 year reasonable money, wouldn't you want to bring a guy like that back, even though he's on an expiring contract? So it just, and I'm not going to go through every free agent, but like it's just not logical.
So the Red Sox are in a spot now where even if they wanted to ship off some of these guys right away and acquire assets, they can't do it. You can't finish last 3 out of 4 years and then blow it up in April again. Like what message are you sending to the fan base? What message are you sending to your season ticket holders? Like you just spent the whole winter getting destroyed by local and national media. So even if you wanted to blow it up in April, you can't do it. It's just not realistic. They need to find ways to win. So I just, it's crazy. I mean, it's not even, or is it April 20th? I don't think it even is. April 18th. For 4 more minutes. But like Jason said, I mean, Ed is just, he's trying to figure it out as a content creator. And I've never had a single interaction, not let alone conversation. I've never had a single interaction with Ed Hand. And he had both of my accounts blocked. He had the podcast account blocked. He did have my personal account blocked, but I think he unblocked that because I was seeing likes at various points. But just as a content creator, he basically owns a podcast. I'm not even going to call it a rival podcast because they haven't really broken out yet. But you know, their strategy is typically to out-homer the rest of the, you know, the Red Sox content creators. And we're not, that's not who we are anyway. We're kind of in our own lane. There's no other podcast like ours that's more objective and critical when it's time to be critical, which has been most of the time. So, you know, that's just not good content to be putting out there.
Well, and it just amazed me because he is a smart guy. He's very logical. Like when you look at most of his tweets, there is a lot of logic behind them. And it's, you know, I do think he's smart. That's why I was just like, baffled that a guy who, you know, is usually more on the positive side and is usually pretty logical, just was like, yep, no, April 18th, April 17th, whatever, blow it up. It's done. You know, if you lose Rafael Devers. And by the way, Rafael Devers has not been playing well so far this year. I know he's your superstar, but he's off to a slow start. Like, if, you know, losing Tyler O'Neill to the 7-day IL has been worse than if you lose Rafi. So it's, you know, I think it's just like Rafi has that, like, the name power behind him, right? He's the superstar with the big contract. So people look at that and go, oh, if you lose him, it's big time trouble. But really, when you look at it, he has been playing well, and the team can still, you know, at times score runs without him in the lineup. So why would you punt on the season in April and making a development season? Well, if you're going to do that, fire Alex Cora today, because he's not going to want to manage that. He doesn't want to manage a bunch of kids who, you know, can't figure out their ass from their elbow. I mean, you see it, like he gets frustrated watching David Hamilton and Pablo Reyes out there. And Reyes is like a veteran player, and he's already frustrated with him. David Hamilton's a joke. Like, Valdez isn't any better. So Cora's not going to want to stick around for that. You can't do that to him. So it's just, that's why it just doesn't make any sense. Like, you'd have to fire the manager. You'd have to make all these trades, like, you know, and I don't know if he meant like trade them all now or just wait until closer to the deadline, but still, like, Jansen's losing value by the day. So I don't know what much you're going to get for him. You might get something for Chris Martin. You'll probably get something for Tyler O'Neill, although, you know, if he's got to get back on the field and stay healthy. So it's just the whole thing of it just was not logical. And it was maybe he was just having a moment and overreacting and just, you know, was passionate and just fired off the tweet, you know, without even really thinking about it. I've been guilty of that. I've done that plenty of times, so I get it. But it just, the idea of like just being okay with, oh yeah, just make it a development season, that's fine. Ugh. Like, I don't think he understands how brutal that actually would be on a day-to-day basis. Because it's fun watching Mayer, Teal, Anthony from afar, right? You look up their AAA numbers, they're doing great so far. They're all off to good starts. That's in AAA. Bobby Dalbec hits in AAA too. What happens when he comes up to the majors? And, you know,
0 for 32.
Bingo. And Jeremy mentioned it. Like, you want to rush their development? So all of a sudden now, you know, we're a team that's going to rush all our prospects up to the majors. We're going to be just like the Oakland Athletics. We're going to be just like Miami, just like the Chicago White Sox, all these dumb teams that rush guys too fast and ruin their development. How does that make any sense? So it just, the whole thing was just incredibly flawed logic.
And the other thing is, I know the tweet related to expiring contracts, but like, even if you open it up to the whole roster, who's marketable right now, right? Hauk. Yeah, but young guy, controllable, cheap money, still ascending, doesn't make any sense. He's part of your future. You know, I mean, I can't think of anybody that's really marketable, that's contract is in a place that it would make sense. Martin would be a guy. That's a guy who would fetch, you know, but again, what are you going to get for what he's 37, Terry?
Martin, he is. He'll be 38 at some point this year.
Yeah, so like you're not going to get like a backup outfielder and two prospects. You're going to get some middling like guy that throws 99 that can't find the strike zone and high A ball. Like, nothing's going to help speed things up with the assets we have. So I think you're just in a position, unfortunately, to ride what's going on and find out who's going to be here to help us rebound and then who's not. And I think that's a better use of the talent. Let them learn and play here that are already here. And, you know, you're going to make certain decisions as you move forward. And those guys do start to filter into your roster, Teal and Mayer and those guys. So, yeah, I chalked it. I don't know this Ed Hand guy. I'm sure he's a great guy, you know, but I'm not much of a tweeter, more of just a reactor and absorbing content. But this sounded like a tweet on a Tuesday night game we lost by getting shut out, and it kind of an overreaction in the moment.
Just to expand on Ed, he was a card-carrying member of the Bluminati, always defending everything Bloom did. This is just 6 hours ago from Ed. He quote tweeted a guy who says three times in a row, "I hate Joe Jakes. I hate Joe Jakes." And Ed, the defender of mediocrity that he is, quote tweets him and says, "He's a depth reliever. Settle down." I mean, Joe Jakes is god awful. Where was his numbers last year? Right here. So last year, I'm surprised it's this low, but he had an earned run average of 5.06, and gave up 15 earned runs in 26 and two thirds innings. So that's the type of guy Ed is. He's just
not a big league pitcher.
He just refuses to embrace reality and talk about what's really going on. He, much like Carrabas, he can really play off the homer crowd. And I'll give Ed credit. I mean, his Twitter account is great. Anything in print, whether it's writing or it's tweeting, he really captivates his following. But unfortunately, it's the dumbest faction of Red Sox fans that, you know, he's catering to.
Yeah, it's the hopeless romantics of the Red Sox fan base that just, teams in last place, they're struggling, but, you know, they look at that Worcester lineup and they're like, 2026, we're going to be World Series champions with Marcelo Mayer at shortstop, Kyle Teal behind the plate, Roman Anthony in the outfield, and they're all going to be MVPs and they're all going to hit. Can't possibly anything go wrong there. It's just when in reality, we've seen so many prospects come up and just flounder. And
the problem there is everyone looks like what the Astros did, right? They stunk for years and they let those guys grow into what they are. And everyone focuses on the Astros, but they don't focus on teams like the Athletics, who've been doing the same thing for two decades, and the White Sox. And I mean, I could go on and on and on, but they focus on the success stories with this plan, which is to not supplement the big league roster year in and year out and just wait. It's very rare where you get a team like the Astros, and maybe the Orioles ascend all the way to where the Astros got, which is multiple World Series champions, but they haven't won jack bleep yet. So I'm not aware, like the Devil Rays. How long are we waiting for the Devil Rays? Even though they ascended to like a good team and a playoff team, they're not winning on a regular basis in a powerhouse. That's not how this works, guys. You know what makes you a contender every year? You spend money. The Dodgers are in it every year because they supplement the roster based on need with cash money. The Astros is a blip. No one else has done it, guys. We're not the Astros. The odds of us being the Astros are not good. So the plan of sitting around hoping all these prospects, it's like the guy who thinks the backup quarterback is going to bring the team to the promised land. It never happens. The guy's a starter for a reason. He's the better player. Like, now I'm about to go on an ownership rant, and Terry's giving me the stink eye, and, you know, we got all this. So I'm not doing it. Although we do need to supplement the big league roster with money from outside the organization.
All I was going to say was to add to your point, Devers and Bogarts didn't really break out until their third seasons. So everybody expecting Meyer, Teal, and Anthony to come up and be all-stars from jump straight, it's just not realistic. If they're not coming up until 2025 or 2026, they're not, you might not see real, you know, real great production from them until 2027, 2028.
I'm not a big fan of complimenting Terry, but here's where I agree with him. Okay.
You're going to be doing it a lot, my friend.
I don't know about that.
It's not 2019 anymore. It's not 2019 anymore.
All right. The best way, in my opinion, to win on a year-in, year-out basis is you spend money outside the organization for immediate need, right? You need a corner outfielder, power-hitting outfielder, you sign them, right? That contract eventually expires. You have the replacement in the system that bats ninth for a year. Then he bats seventh for a year. Then the veteran times out of the league, and now he's your middle of the lineup bat, and now it's his turn to be the superstar, and so on and so forth. To wait for the middle of the lineup to come from the minor leagues is not the way to do it. That guy is to supplement an existing big league competitive club, not the other way around. You're not going to get, you know, Correa, Altuve, the lefty that just won the MVP, the World Series MVP 2 years ago. I'm spacing out his name.
Like, Alvarez.
Oh, yeah, Alvarez.
Yeah. Alvarez. You know, and so on and so forth. Like, that's not how it happens. Everyone just ascends to be an all-star. It's a supplemental system. It's a rolling basis. That's not how you build a big league club. And it's absolutely infuriating if that's what they think is going to happen.
And keep in mind, you've got to be good at it if you do it that way. Because look at Colorado. They've been drafting high for years. They don't really have any great prospects. And they tried to supplement the roster. They gave Chris Bryant this ridiculous contract, and he blows now. Like, and they fumbled Arenado. Like, so you've got to be good at doing it. Are we sure the Red Sox are going to be as smart as the Astros? Like, are the Red Sox front office, are we sure they're going to be as smart as the Astros front office or the Braves front office?
Spoiler alert. No.
No, probably not.
What have they done to build your trust?
Nothing.
Tyler O'Neill, is there a Tyler O'Neill crowd coming after me? Like, nothing.
Well, and maybe Charlie would, but that's...
Yeah.
Well, Charlie's not here, so we'll hear about it in the war room.
Yeah. I've said over and over again, and this is what's mind-boggling, is we know what a World Series team looks like. We've seen four of them, and most of them were drastically different from the previous one. And... so how did we lose sight of that? How did we
answer that?
How did we get to the point where we're so dysfunctional? Go ahead.
It's very simple, in my opinion. At some point, ownership's priorities flipped from winning to monetizing the asset in their portfolio. It's really that simple. Look, if ownership wanted to spend $300 million a year, like the Dodgers, I'll use them as the example because they're the gold standard, like they could do it. And guess what? They'd bang out the building. The merchandise would start flying. Nesson would go up. Like all of it. It's all hand in hand. But we're being run by a hedge fund manager and not a fan of baseball. And it's a serious problem. And that is my biggest concern about when we're going to be good again, because I don't think it's going to be anytime soon. And by the way, if we turn out to not be the Astros, we're going to suck for a decade.
Well, it's been just about half a decade already.
We'll add another decade. Because it's not, guys, by the way, I know I'm 0-2, so it's a small sample size, but can I get on this thing after we win a series? Because maybe I'd be a little bit more optimistic, because it's like, you know, I'm looking at 23-130 with a guy who threw a complete game, you know, and it just looked that bad except for one player. So, you know, maybe I'm pulling an Ed Hand and being a little too dramatic right now because I'm frustrated by the current product, but I just don't see it. I don't see it for a long time. And maybe we hit on one guy, two guys. The chances of counting on 4, 5, 6 guys coming up through the system all hitting, 0% chance.
So I agree that John Henry, you know, it's more of a corporate thing now than it is. Like, it's not an adventure anymore for him, you know, chasing the next championship. And... but the thing that frustrates me is, let's say they're trying to be the Tampa Bay Rays or another mid-market team that's done okay. They're sucking at that. Like, there's no strategy here. There's no smart strategy that they're executing right now. It's a major dysfunction. And nobody wanted Breslow's job. Nobody wanted it. And Breslow, to me, I mean, he's kind of, he's looking like a science project gone bad. Like, they're like, okay, this guy didn't, you know, this hasn't really panned out. You know, all he's got this year so far is Justin Slayton and Andrew Bailey. And that's it. And again, the Red Sox were already targeting Andrew Bailey. You were already seeing rumors of him before Breslow was even hired. So I don't know. I don't want to go into a Sam Kennedy rant right now, because that's who I'm really, that's who I think is the real problem.
But it's
behind
not Sam Kennedy. He's the he's the puppet.
I don't
that
think
John
so.
Henry has shoved his hand under and is ferreting around to take the blame when there's one guy that can stop it all right now. And that's John Henry, if he reached his hand into his pocket and focused on the Red Sox.
He can.
And tell me I'm wrong, because I'm not. If he told Sam Kennedy, stop perpetrating that and start spending money, like, don't talk to the media. You don't need to explain the future. Just go do it now. And even if they got it wrong, Terry, we would be okay with the effort. There's one guy that could change it all, and he's done jack shit except for cry on the field, which now seems like the most disingenuous act I can remember in recent time, because then he couldn't go to the funeral 3 days later.
So I don't disagree that Henry can stop it, because he can, but at the same time, Sam Kennedy has tons of power, almost carte blanche. And if you look at that list of people who declined to come here, I was obsessed before Breslow got hired. I was obsessed with why. I'm like, why wouldn't this guy want to be the next chief executive of the Boston Red Sox? And then it started to make sense when Breslow came in, because guess what, Breslow? You're not bringing your own guys. You're keeping all the holdovers. You're not even bringing your own general manager in. You're not even going to pick your manager. And that's a Sam Kennedy thing. Sam Kennedy is keeping the band together. Brian O'Halloran, Eddie Romero, Raquel Ferreira. Cora was told he was keeping his job before Breslow was even brought in. That's Sam Kennedy. He's got a ton of power. And
who can fire Sam Kennedy?
John Henry. Now, I'm not saying Henry can't walk into the office and clean house. I don't disagree with that. But I think as the top lieutenant, I think Kennedy just has all the power. Here's another thing I haven't really pointed out yet. You look at the Dombrowski era, all of the PR, it was probably 80% Dombrowski, 20% Kennedy. Kennedy just didn't have a ton of influence. Dombrowski was by far the most trusted, the most experienced executive in there, and Kennedy wasn't a factor. When the Bloom era came in, when it came to PR, it was probably about 50-50. And Bloom was Kennedy's guy. Bloom was the only guy Kennedy interviewed, and he spearheaded that. So it was about 50-50. Now that Breslow's in here, it's like 80% Kennedy, 20% Breslow. Breslow very rarely talks to the media. Outside of spring training, he's almost been somewhat reclusive. And I just think Kennedy has this unprecedented amount of power right now. And I think he's a massive problem.
So you put me into a little bit of a corner here, Terry, because I don't disagree with a lot of what you're saying, but it's also a red herring, because it could be very easily fixed by John Henry.
Well, let me ask you this.
If you're John Henry, you can go ahead, ask me.
How much trust does John Henry have in Sam Kennedy? Too much should be the
100%
answer.
Because John has stuck his hand and is moving Sam Kennedy around as he sees fit. Look, if John, let's use Cora as an example, okay? If John Henry's sitting there and Sam Kennedy goes on WEEI or 98.5 or to one of the papers and says, Cora's our guy. And the radio host or the journalist goes, well, but you haven't selected the GM yet. So isn't that kind of his job? And John's sitting there going, well, yeah, that's a problem. As soon as it's over, as soon as the article's printed, the segment's over on the radio, if you give a bleep, you pick up the phone and you go, Kennedy, what are you doing? What do you, like, we're bringing in the GM and we're handicapping him because we don't let him have his own guy? Like, John Henry doesn't want to fire people because he doesn't want to have to pay him to not work. So if you're keeping people in place, that's a factor. And it goes on and on and on. You're the owner of the company. There's no one else that has say over you. So if you own a manufacturer of a granite countertop, and the manager is hiring bad people to build the countertops, you fire them. So you could say what you want about Sam Kennedy, and I get it, and they're good points. I'm not going to argue that, but like, you want change, there's one guy that can do it, and he's done nothing.
If John Henry walked in that front office and there was suddenly a massacre, it would make my day. And I'd shut the hell up and at least observe for, you know, a few weeks.
You'd see who he'd put in place.
Exactly. And what needs to happen here, Breslow's probably coming back. I think it would be a weird PR move.
He gets at least 3 years. At least.
Unfortunately, I think that's right. But when the next guy comes in, it has to be someone who's going to look Sam Kennedy in the face and say, bleep you, I'm doing it my way. That's why I'm here. I'm the smart executive. I've got the background with all the success, and I'm doing it my way. And I'm doing it with my guys. And until that happens, I don't think it's going to...
But that's not going to happen, Terry. It's not, because they're not going to hire that guy.
It might not happen, but it's what needs to happen.
Well, that part I agree with.
Okay. You're getting good at that, by the way. Jason, what are your thoughts? Jeremy and I have very civilly this week.
More reasonable, so it's harder to disagree with you on everything you say. although I would prefer it that way.
Jeremy and I are very civilly playing patty cakes this week, so Jason's not, you know, getting his mic time in. But go ahead.
It's fine. Look, we can only dream. We can only dream that John Henry wakes up from whatever stupor he's in, but. I don't see that happening. He's having too much fun on his yacht, just, you know, collecting more teams to add to his portfolio. So, and yeah, Breslow's not going to be the guy to, you know, tell Sam Kennedy, bleep you, I'm doing it my way. It's just that their whole power structure just is not good. The head guy who really has all the power doesn't care. And then everyone below him just kind of falls in line, and they just, you know, they're never going to like stick their necks out to make anything different. As long as, you know, they keep selling tickets, which, by the way, attendance seems to be going down, which I think is a good sign. I do think that there are certain sects of the fan base that are waking up and realizing like, this is not okay. We're not going to go to the ballpark anymore, but you're still going to get 30,000, you know, parents with young kids that want to, you know, take them to the ballpark for a day and stuff like that. So it just, it's not going
to
change.
Take them to the Celtics and the Bruins, who give a bleep.
Exactly.
It blows. Like, look, if you're a family, you got two kids, you're making ends meet, but to go to a game's $400, $500, $600, and you got to put it on the credit card and pay interest, you're out of your mind putting yourself in debt to go see this bleep show. Just stop. Don't do it. Like, literally do anything else. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. Unless you have the money to blow on something that has no redeemable value, like, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
No. As Matt McCarthy on 98.5 says, it's still Boston's best bar. So unfortunately, it's just.
Well, because at other, he's wrong, because at other bars, I can watch the Dodgers or, you know, the Orioles or the Yankees or whatever. I don't want to go and watch a 6-0, 7-10, like seven, like, no, that's that. No. Yeah. And by the way, I like McCarthy. He's good.
Yeah. But yeah, no, unfortunately, it's just going to be more of the same. So it's going to be a frustrating season once again, I feel like. So with that, we will call it a show. Enjoy the Pirates series this weekend. hopefully they can at least manage one win out of those three games. I don't know. Pirates are a pretty good team this year. You know, they're a team that actually spent money and brought in some players to supplement their young talent. What a thought. But yeah, enjoy that series, and the weekend crew will have you guys Monday morning to recap that, and we will see you all later. Take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.